you're in the 06010.
And the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Go to geico.com today and welcome in to our first Fantasy Focus in the month of March of 2021. You know the crew, Field, Matthew, Stefania, and we have a very special show coming up today, most specifically because we have Raiders star tight end joining Matthew for an exclusive interview. Lots to cover between those two legends. Looking forward to that. Before we get to that and also our mailbag questions, hello, Stefania.
Hello, Field. How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm pretty good. Pretty good.
You're just cruising along, right? It's like such a formality.
You actually say Darren Waller's name, or did you just say Raiders tight end?
I think I said Darren Waller's name. Okay. Well, hey, if I didn't say Darren Waller's name, I think it was pretty clear when I mentioned Raiders star tight end. But for a proper introduction, Raiders star tight end Darren Waller. We'll be joining the show in just a little bit to talk to
Jason Witten's agent is online too.
Jason Witten retired.
I understand, but he may retire as a Raiders tight end. We don't know yet.
Fair enough. Very good point. My apologies there to Darren and Jason and, of course, to Matthew. Let's get right into it because Matthew's conversation with Darren will be the star of the show. We wanted to do a mailbag show because not a ton of news right now. We are about 13 days from the start of the legal negotiating window, which basically is free agency in the NFL. So we have some sort of nonsense questions with a few football questions folded in as well. I'll start. And I guess I'll just mention that I am Jay Glaze. Are you guys going to have off-season shows? No, of course we are, Jay Glaze. Every Tuesday, you should be up around noon Eastern time. And we're going to do our best to keep this rolling throughout the entirety of the off-season. That one is simple enough. Next question comes from Calvin 24. And this is sort of an interesting one, Matthew. I'll start with you. If Deshaun Watson does not get traded by the Texans, should fantasy managers stay away from drafting him if he threatens to sit out the season the same way Le'Veon Bell did?
It's a great question. And I don't know that's one that we have real insight into, you know, now. I think a lot's going to happen between now and training camp. Having said that, yes, if I was in a draft right now, if I was doing one of the, you know, their best ball drafts that are going on right now, I certainly think there's a chance that happens. It really seems like he's dug in, and we have seen, whether it is Le'Veon Bell, whether it's Melvin Gordon for a handful of games, like we have seen players do this. And Deshaun Watson seems to be, you know, really, really, really dug in. And all the reporting from Adam Schefter and others suggests that this is not a ploy. This is not him playing games. Like, you know, he truly believes at this minute that he has played his last game for the Houston Texans. So when you think about where he might go in drafts among other quarterbacks, Field, think about it. Like, I mean, like you're sitting there like him or Kyler Murray, him or Josh Allen, him or, you know, him even or Aaron Rodgers, him or, you know, I mean, like him or Lamar Jackson, right? Him or Dak Prescott. Like, you feel better about all those guys playing this year.
Yeah. The only thing that's different about Le'Veon Bell, other than the fact that we don't know that Deshaun Watson might sit out, is just that replacing an RB1, especially when it's going to be drafted in the first round, is much more difficult to do than replacing a quarterback. That being said, if Deshaun Watson misses 10 games and you bypass a Kyler or a Lamar or the other quarterbacks Matthew mentioned, it could be a little bit of a sour taste in your mouth. I think probably the most responsible thing to do is probably have this conversation at the end of this month when free agency's first couple of waves are over, and then have it again at the end of the month of April when I guess the draft technically ends May 1st. But the Tuesday after the 2021 NFL draft, we might have a clearer picture, because if no trade has happened by then, I'm not saying a trade won't happen after then, but as we know, if you're going to trade Deshaun Watson, it better be for a ton of draft picks. And we've got a draft that's now 59 days away. Hey, Stefania.
Can I ask a quick question as a part of that? Kyle and I were talking about this question yesterday as we were putting the note together. And I'm just curious, understanding a lot's going to change between now and then, but how much can Deshaun Watson's value change based on this trade? I mean, is there a chance that he, let's say he was QB5 or something like that in your guys' mind?
Yeah.
Were the Texans the floor for his fantasy value, or is there an opportunity for him to continue to be able to go up ahead of Kyler for certain, ahead of Lamar Jackson potentially to be that number two spot? understanding there's a lot of moving pieces and there's a lot of teams that still need a quarterback. So I'm just curious, because the Texans as a franchise, you know, have struggled in
well, last year they did. I mean, they also won the division like 6 out of 7 years prior to that. So they were winning a ton. My thought would be, and Matthew or Stefania, feel free to disagree, is that the guy led the league in passing last year. He had like 35 passing touchdowns. I don't think the Texans were the floor. I think the Texans were actually a pretty fantasy friendly spot for him. But no matter where he plays, like if he plays, I don't care if you just spun a wheel and no matter where it landed, Deshaun, if he's playing 16 games, is still going to crack close to my top five for quarterbacks.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, it's all shades of gray there. Like the guys that I just all mentioned, right? I mean, the Josh Allens, the Kyler Murrays, that, you know, honestly, I think Dak is in that conversation, assuming he's 100% healthy, right? That, I mean, all those guys, obviously Lamar Jackson and Mahomes and, you know, Aaron Rodgers, we expect some regression, but, you know, he's in that conversation as well. Like, he's right there. You know, yeah. you have him two spots here, one spot down, whatever. Like, you know, in any draft where people know what they're doing, and after, you know, 7 or 8 quarterbacks are gone, there's no draft in America where Deshaun Watson isn't one of the first 8 quarterbacks drafted, I believe. Right?
Yeah.
Certainly, unless we have some sort of, you know, weird news where, you know, he's definitely not playing.
Or he gets traded to Washington or something like that, like a really bad team, you know?
Hey, even there, listen, you put him in there and I've still got him in my top five. I will say that, like, sometimes when you're separating. I
mean, you've got Terry McLaurin, you've got Logan Thomas, you've got Antonio Gibson. You're going to add a wide receiver, maybe Curtis Samuel. I mean, like, it's not like a desolate, you know, like, it's not like a minor league team like the Lions where everyone's leaving, where Kenny Golladay and Marvin Jones and Danny Amendola, you know, are like, let me out of here.
Well, let's move forward, you know, before Danny Matthew
Amendola,
and Daniel.
Literally, Danny Amendola said, I'll retire before I play another down for the Lions. I think he said that. I may be making it up. I'm not sure.
Really? I mean, I haven't followed every little tiny bit of news, but Kidding. I don't.
He did not say that.
I was going to
say. Danny Amendola does not say that. But okay. I bet he thought it.
Maybe. Let's move forward here. This one comes from the great Elizabeth Fearman. Of course, our fearless leader of all our events that take place on the road or remotely like this past year because of COVID. She wants to know, and I'll start with Stefania because I feel like you're going to have a better answer than Matthew. Who's your favorite character / actor from Hamilton? Of course, available on Disney+.
Yeah, I love Elizabeth with the shameless plug, but well worth it. And if you haven't seen Hamilton, folks who have Disney+, set aside the time for it. It's fantastic. I've, of course, seen it multiple times in real life and on Disney+. And this is a tough question because I love them all. And the obvious, you know, obviously I love the Alexander Hamilton character, but I think one of my favorites who gets a little less cred, I love David Diggs playing Thomas Jefferson and Lafayette. It's fantastic. But I loved George Washington. Like, just that there's a quality about that's really brought out in the show, which of course is based, don't want to get in this discussion about the facts, but George Washington opted to step down when he was at the height of his presidency and put limits on himself and said, it's time for someone else to step up. And there are not many people who are willing to do that.
Matthew, you got an answer here?
I thought Stefania was really smart.
I'll offer something then we'll move forward.
No, listen, I mean, like, you know, Leslie Odom is really talented. He played Aaron Burr.
Yep. Aaron Burr,
and Lin-Manuel Miranda, like, whatever. You know, sometimes you just got to take the chalk answer. I'll take the chalk answer.
Well, good. And it's a good answer, by the way, is, of course, he went to Wesleyan, which we don't get to shout out notable alumni all that frequently. So when you have someone.
I mean, it's pretty much him and Belichick, right?
Wow. I'm trying to think. Michael Bay.
As far as I know, the only two people that are
Kimberly Martin.
Kimberly Martin, good point.
Yeah. Bill Belichick and Lin-Manuel Miranda.
That's right. Yeah. Michael Bay is pretty legit. Like, if your acting career keeps up on a current trajectory, you might one day have the chops to appear in a Michael Bay film.
Yes.
So we can table this conversation about notable.
Do you have someone field?
So my answer was going to, I feel obligated to say Lin-Manuel. But David Digg, just as a performer, I thought he was sort of the breakthrough. I guess they were all breakthrough performers, maybe other than Leslie Odom, who'd kind of already established himself, and Lin-Manuel to a degree. But I think David Diggs is just like this wildly talented individual. To play a couple of roles concurrently is obviously a huge, huge, huge task.
And I love Angelica Houston.
He is terrific.
He is good.
No, I meant Angelica Schuyler, but I can't think of her real name, but such incredible range in her performance. She's fantastic.
I really liked, too, Jonathan Groff, who plays the King of England.
The King.
Like, every time he came on, so he was just amazing. He played that role so well.
Yeah, so good. Such a great performance by all involved. Please check it out if you haven't already, which I'm sure basically everybody here listening right now has previously. All right, next question.
As long as we're going to take more questions on Disney Plus, I would prefer them to stay in the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Okay.
I will accept Star Wars or Simpsons questions. All right, thank you.
We can do that we can try that. Moving forward here, this one is a question about second year running backs. And I think, Matthew, what's probably going to happen is recency bias is going to make this an easy answer for now, but it might change by the start of the season. Who would you prefer to draft first, Clyde Edwards-Helaire or Cam Akers going into 2021?
Here's the weird thing. I'm giving this answer with the idea that Damian Williams is back with the Chiefs.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Cam Akers, and I'm surprised at myself by saying that, but just the Chiefs proved they didn't really need to run the ball last year to be successful. They really didn't get a ton from Clyde Edwards-Helaire or Le'Veon Bell or Darwin Thompson. Honestly, Darrell Williams might've been their most effective running back.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, like when you have a healthy Tyreek Hill, a healthy Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes right arm, you really don't need a lot more. And, I don't know. There wasn't a lot that Clyde Edwards-Helaire showed you on the field to make you say, ooh, yeah. We saw the tape from LSU. We love the tape from LSU. We know the fantasy success of the lead running back in an Andy Reid offense. But just in terms of, like, if you take the uniforms off and you just watch film, like, Cam Akers was the better running back last year, especially over the second half of the year. And so – we expect the Rams offense to be better, elevated by Matthew Stafford, finally freed from Detroit, which was bringing them down. I mean, and so now in a real team and a real franchise and a real offense, we expect the LA Rams to be effective and in scoring position more often. And, you know, we've seen it with Todd Gurley. Once Sean McVay commits to a running back, like, good things can happen. I think it's going to be close, but as of right now, assuming Williams is back with the Chiefs, give me Cam Akers.
I will say this, that like I actually was more impressed with Clyde Edwards-Helaire based off what I saw last year than you were, but a lot of that was like open field running and an occasional make you miss highlight. It's the lack of end zone, I guess, goal line duties that we think is just, that's the biggest red flag, right? I mean, it's just, and you have no idea how to predict whether the Chiefs will next year be much more committed to Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but using the old, if it ain't broke, don't fix it mantra. Last year, they were a great goal line offense with throwing the ball a ton, throwing little scoop passes to Travis Kelce, having Travis Kelce attempting passes to Patrick Mahomes, throwing the ball to offensive linemen. So the Chiefs have enough avenues to not have to rely on a hammerhead running back at the goal line, which we thought would be a role that Clyde Edwards-Helaire would take on last year. He did not. Stefan, you want to break the tie? Or no, you want to?
Yeah, I was just going to add one quick thank you, Field, and then Stefan, you can break the tie.
I guess it wasn't a tie because I agree with you. It's Akers.
Oh, got it. Okay. Well, then I was just going to say that I'm with you on the fact there's some flashy plays. Like, you could put together a pretty good highlight reel of Clyde Edwards-Helaire from last year. But again, I don't know that, like, you know, over a 20 carry game that, like, I just, they were given his role in that offense and the potential, it wasn't consistent enough. I didn't see that flash often enough when we see other rookie running backs last year, you know, like, again, like, you know, I'm making fun of the Lions because of Daniel, but I would argue that, you know, anecdotally, DeAndre Swift has had as many of those kind of like, ooh, moments as Clyde Edwards-Helaire last year. We just didn't talk about him because the Lions weren't good last year. And obviously the Chiefs were one of the preeminent teams in the NFL. So I'm not sitting here writing off CEH, but I do think given the opportunity, I don't think he made the most of it. I was more impressed with Akers.
Stefania, consensus?
Yeah, you know, you mentioned recency bias, but I also think it's a real thing. You take the guy who is on a trajectory in the upward direction at the end of the year, and that was Cam Akers, especially over the last half of the season. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, don't forget, had a really bad injury. And when he came back from it, I was impressed with how he came back, because I actually didn't think, I thought there was a chance that he might not play at the end of the year, but I don't know that we saw the 100% Clyde Edwards-Helaire. So you take that uncertainty, just sort of where he is, you know, after what happened to him, the injury was more significant than people think. And then the way he was utilized, and it doesn't make me feel as optimistic as I did going into last year when he was a rookie.
Yeah. And I guess the last thing that I'll say is that, like, from a pedigree standpoint, not like these players are that far off. You got a guy who's in the last pick of the first round, another guy who's in, I believe, the middle of the second round, but a second round pick for the Rams. So there was plenty of talent that Cam Akers had coming into the season. It was about opportunity. So all things being equal, if the opportunities are comparable, or if, I guess, no, if that, not even the opportunities are comparable, but we think Cam Akers has a better chance of goal line duties, passing game work, every down back than Clyde Edwards-Helaire does. A couple more to wrap things up before the interview with Darren Waller, Raiders star tight end. I don't know, what is there a reason why we keep getting questions about James Robinson? This one comes from Travis Tarasenko. Do we think James Robinson will continue to be a solid running back next year, especially adding potentially Trevor Lawrence and maybe other weapons? First of all, you can eliminate the potentially from the Trevor Lawrence thing. It's happening, right? Other weapons, yeah, they'll add other weapons as well. I don't know. I mean, so I'll reiterate.
I feel like we had this conversation last week.
Yeah, I'll just reiterate what we've talked about previously. Is, I think it's even the last two shows, is that he was RB5, James Robinson was, on a points per game basis. Am I going to have five running backs ranked higher than James Robinson going into next season? I am, yes. But if I emerge from a draft with James Robinson as either my RB1 or RB2, I'm going to be comfortable with that. Like, he was really stinking good last year. He got all the work. It may not be quite as much of a bell cow role next year, but too good for them to, it's not like, I know they're going to improve, but it's not like they've got, you know, Emmitt Smith in his prime back there. Like, barring them using a high pick on a running back, Daniel, I'm in there on James Robinson.
So I have a question from that perspective of, like, it seems like, and I don't know if this question is coming because he was an undrafted free agent. Maybe the team might not be as committed based on the contract or whatever. But, like, from that standpoint, doesn't this feel like the perfect opportunity for a team where you have an undrafted free agent, the contract is real low for a running back at a position where you want to have a smaller contract, because running backs don't, you know, from that perspective, it's, to me, I feel like we just keep getting this question because there's this thought process of, are they going to invest in someone else, or are they okay?
I don't think I've been watching it. I think, relatively speaking, no one has seen James Robinson play, right? Like, you see, and I don't mean that, like, to be dismissive of our viewers' time and energy on Sundays, but, like, I have seen less of James Robinson than I have Dalvin Cook or, you know, Aaron Jones or other guys who finished a little bit ahead of him, like Dalvin Cook, or a little bit behind him, like Aaron Jones, right? Your exposure is mitigated when the Jaguars don't play. I think they might have had, what, one primetime game this entire past season. So I think some of it is just that we haven't seen as much of him. You haven't witnessed it as much. That I still have a lot of reason to believe in James Robinson going into next season based off talent alone. A couple more here just to wrap things up before the interview. And this one, a couple of more nonsense questions. This one comes from user Bryce, who wants to know, Matthew, in the current 06-010 regime, it's clear that Field is Leonardo and Stefania is Donatello. My question is, who's Mikey and who is Ralph between you and Daniel Dopp? Asking for a friend. This, of course, is a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle reference.
Yeah, so a couple of things. So obviously, Ralph is speaking about Raphael, and Mikey is Michelangelo.
Yep.
Why is it clear that you're Leonardo and Stefania is Donatello? Why is that clear?
Well, I don't know, but ones. I wasn't going to challenge it.
They're the good ones. They're the ones that people like. They're the ones that everybody gets along with.
Yeah.
They connect with the audience. They're the ones that they have, people have action figures of. When you think about them, those are the things you think of first, is those two more than the other ones. I think that's generally consensus. That's why I think the answer to that question.
Interesting. Well,
good description, Daniel.
I just like that. Well, but what's interesting there, Field, I don't know if you noticed what happened there. So Daniel was trying to do that to try to get back at me for making fun of his Lions. But if you notice the question, it's clear that Field Yates is Leonardo and Stefania is Donatello. Who is Michelangelo and who is Ralph between you and Daniel Dopp? So you are also left out, Daniel Dopp. If the insinuation there is that, you know, those that Stefania and Field are the most liked and the most thought of when people think of this podcast, fair, but just so you know, you're in the gutter with me, brother. Just, yeah. I want you to understand.
I'm sorry, dude.
Like, you know, like, come on down to the bottom floor with me. That's fine. I have to be honest with you. Like, I've watched the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movies, and I actually watched them recently again because my girls like them. I couldn't tell you which turtle is what characteristics any of them have. They all like pizza. They have different color headbands.
And they have different, rat.
All, yeah. And they have different weapons. You know, one's got nunchucks and, you know, one's got a sword. And like, but to tell you which one is which and what personalities they have beyond that, I couldn't tell you. Someone tell me what Michelangelo and Raphael's personalities are as turtles, and then I can get you that answer.
I'll let Daniel finish the thought then. Daniel, you can be the official deciding vote on which turtle you are and which Matthew is.
I got to be honest, Field. I was
this is outside of your range.
I never really watched Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
You know what? To be honest,
this is your demographic.
Kind of. To be honest, I was so flattered by the question that I didn't put too much thought into the answer about you and Daniel. I kind of feel like we're all maybe like fish out of water right here trying to decide who is who.
Let's just say this. Who was the bad guy? I think I'm Splinter, right?
Splinter?
You're the rat. Yeah, so I'm Splinter. And Matthew, whoever the bad guy is on the show, and we'll just leave it at that.
I thought Splinter was the bad guy.
Was he?
I thought Splinter was an ally. There's the wise rat that trains them, and then there's the bad guy. I thought the bad guy was named
That's
Splinter.
Correct, yeah. Doesn't he have a robe? The wise rat has a robe? I don't know.
Maybe he does.
We are embarrassing
probably really cringy for someone
time.
That loves Teenage Mutant.
Totally. All right, let's wrap this up. And this question is designed specifically for Daniel. This comes from Josh D619. Hey, can we get a suggestion of a crappy band you've never heard of to go on an iTunes wormhole dive for the day?
Absolutely.
Hey, before we get there, I just want to let you know something here. Very important.
Googled the turtles?
Clearly.
Yes, I did. Two things are important. First off, Splinter is the rodent sensei. So
okay.
So it is Splinter. So that's correct. By the way, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the 2014 version of the film, which was released on August 6th, 2014, and grossed $493 million at the box office, was produced by Michael Bay. Proud.
Wow. Look at that.
What a full circle moment.
Full circle. Full circle. There you go.
Wesleyan does legendary things, man. Daniel, I see Darren in the Zoom right now. We're not going to waste his time. Daniel, one quick suggestion of a band, and then we turn the keys over to the real star of the show.
It's a band called Low Tom. Check them out. They have a new record out called LP2. But I'll tell you what, I'm looking forward to the follow-up album to Wall Street, which Darren Waller just put out last year. So I'm excited about that one, too. We'll get into that with Matthew here in just a little bit.
All right, guys, Matthew and Darren, take it away.
All right, very excited to have an exclusive, the definitive interview with Darren Waller, number 83 on the field, number one in your heart, star fantasy, star tight end for the Las Vegas Raiders, star fantasy tight end, better known as Waller the Baller here on this podcast. I want to, Darren, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, yeah, thanks for having me, man.
Appreciate you. I want to... Give me a second. Can I blow some smoke up your butt here? Can I do that for a second here? Let me tell the audience. Insist. Yes, I insist. Okay. So for the last 2 years, there have been only four players in the NFL with at least 90 receptions and at least 1,100 yards. DeAndre Hopkins, Allen Robinson, Travis Kelce, and Darren freaking Waller. Over those 2 years, Darren Waller has 26.8% of his team's receptions. Only DeAndre Hopkins and Davante Adams have a higher percentage of their team's receptions than Darren Waller over the last 2 years, obviously the only tight end on that list. 10 different games with 100 or more receiving yards. That's two more than any other tight end, including Kelce. 23 different games with 5 or more catches. Every other Raider combined over that stretch, 19 such games. 23 for number 83. And in fact, in your age 26 and 27 season, Darren, you had 197 catches, 2,300 yards and 12 touchdowns. Travis Kelce, in his age 26 and 27 seasons, 168 catches, 2,100 receiving yards, 12 touchdowns. Same number of touchdowns, less receiving yards, less receptions than Darren Waller when Travis Kelce was 26 and 27. So, my friend, and you've also, by the way, been a fantasy monster. And I think probably the most important thing of all those stats that I just gave you is that 2 years ago, not before the 2020 season, before the 2019 season, after the NFL Combine, we had Greg Olson, Raiders offensive coordinator, here on the podcast. Jared Cook was still on the team. And we said to him on the podcast, we said, hey, Greg, give us a sleeper. You're looking at the entire offense. Give us a sleeper. And he says, we have this kid, Darren Waller. He goes, and, you know, we'll see how playing time plays out, but we think we've found something with this kid. We think he is special, and we think we've really found something. So that's a name I would say to keep in the back of your radar, Darren Waller. Again, Jared Cook, coming off a big season for the Raiders, was still there. But I said, I did some more research on you, Darren. I found out about your story. I watched some tape on you. I was incredibly impressed. And I went all in on Darren Waller in the 2019 season. You have to draft Waller the Baller. So I think the most important thing of all those stats is that you actually made me look smart, which is not easy to do, my friend. So I just want to congratulate you on that. Tremendous success. Let's get into some of this. I want to talk about sort of your role in the offense. At what was there a point in this in the last 2 years where things just sort of clicked into you? Because you were a wide receiver in college, and then obviously, and we're going to get into this in a little bit, but obviously you were a wide receiver in college. You went to the Ravens. You were released by the Ravens. You were suspended by the league. And so sort of restarting as a tight end, was there a moment where things just clicked in for you and you're like, I have found a home and I know what I'm doing now?
I feel like I kind of had that start for me when I was on the scout team in Baltimore. I was going against, they were the number one defense in 2018. And I was like, I mean, if I could do things here, like I feel like I could do something anywhere. So it started there, and it just carried over into Oakland. I just felt like I kept getting better. And I credit my tight end coach, Frank Smith, former tight end coach now, but he was a great help to me when I got to Oakland and believed in me, you know, just as a person at first. But it started on the scout team and then continued when I got to Oakland. And, you know, pretty like after the first game of the season in 2019, and I was like, I mean, after the first couple of plays, honestly, I was like, oh, like, I feel like I could do this for a while.
Yeah, it felt like, tell me if I'm wrong, you know, like, you know, the idiot on the side watching the games, but felt like in year two in this offense last year, they really sort of expanded your route tree, and they looked for you deep more. They looked for you more in the red zone. It was weird. It was super weird. They would use you, and it felt like in 2019, they would use you between the 20s, and then they'd get in close, and then Foster Moreau is all of a sudden showing up, or whoever. They, you know, they'd want to pound the rock or whatever, but it felt like whether they were using you as a decoy in the red zone or whatever, but it felt like they used you more. They used you a lot more in the red zone this year. And they expanded your route tree. Felt like you were doing more deep stuff. You were doing more curls. You were just am I mistaken, or did it feel like your role expanded this year?
It definitely got expanded in the games. You know, we worked on a lot of that stuff last year, but you know, most of it I guess didn't get called. But yeah, this year I felt like there was a lot more that I was being asked to do on game day, and they challenged me to do that. And I just took the challenge every day to try to be prepared for it.
Have they talked to you any, you know, do we expect, so let's look forward to year three in terms of your role in the Raiders offense. You know, feels like when Derek gets in trouble, he looks for you, you know, which is nice, that connection that you two seem to have. In terms of the offseason stuff that you've been talking about with Coach Gruden, with Coach Olson, have they talked about other aspects of the game that they want you to work on and where they see you next year?
Yeah, I mean, they just said, like, I mean, anything that any receiver in the league is required to do, they said they're going to try to challenge me with and keep trying to throw more at me. So just trying to make sure there's no part of my game where I can say, like, oh, I don't know if I'm comfortable doing that. So it's just working at the slot, outside, hand in the dirt, like, coming out the backfield, like, whatever it looks like. Just not giving myself an excuse not to be good at it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the issues for defensive coordinators. And we saw this some last year where they throw a corner on you because like you're such a, you're a wide receiver in a tight end body in essence. Like, you know, then they use you sort of as a wide receiver, but you're matched up on line. I mean, you're a matchup nightmare. They'll put you on a linebacker or whatever. And yeah, I think they do a really nice job of moving you around and finding those matchups to exploit. So that's been fun to see. Let's stay with the Raiders here. Help us out here in terms of fantasy football. Give us a little bit of scouting report. What should we expect from like Bryan Edwards and Henry Ruggs in year two? If you have to pick one for your fantasy team next year, who you drafting first? And I put you in a tough spot because I know they're both your teammates and you love both of them.
Oh man, picking one over the other. That's tough.
Well, let's start here. Just tell me a little bit more about what you see in both those guys, or just from the receiver group. Just tell me what we can we expect. It was a breakout year for Nelson Agholor as well. I don't want to say breakout, but you know, a comeback year, if you will. You know, things didn't end probably the way he loved in Philadelphia, but great year for Nelson. Talk to me a little bit about what you see in that receiver group and what we should be looking for next year. How about that?
Yeah. Nelly definitely had a huge bounce back year. I'm hoping that we do everything to keep him around. I'm just very impressed by his work ethic, how he shows up every day and is in the right frame of mind to be great. I really like Bryan Edwards. When he came into training camp, it was just like blowing us away how, you know, he reminded me of like a Demaryius Thomas. But very much like him, just how strong he caught the ball and how strong he came out of routes and stuff. Before he had like a foot injury, I think it was, he was playing outstanding, but and still did good things when he came back. So I think he's going to continue to get better. Henry, I like Henry. He's very fast. He's a very mature individual. He knows, you know, where he may need to get better, but you know, the goods and the bad of the season didn't, you know, you didn't see like any kind of reactions from him. He's a guy that I think can weather storms and is a guy that's excited about, you know, showing the world what he's really capable of this year, which is a lot. You know, we've seen some crazy plays that the world hasn't seen him make, you know, on Sunday yet, but we've seen it at practice. And I know that it's going to translate to Sundays at some point. But and then you can't forget about Hunter Renfrow either. That's just that guy's just that guy's money.
He's amazing. Hunter Renfrow. So I went to the every year. I didn't do it this past year, obviously, because of COVID. But every year I get invited to Rookie Premier Day by the NFLPA. And, you know, I help them out with some fantasy stuff. And Hunter and at the Rookie Premier, I've told this story before, but you'll appreciate this, Darren. At the Rookie Premier, it's where rookie players coming in the league get to meet a lot of the league partners and, you know, for the players. And so it's like among the things is they find out their EA Madden rating for the first time, you know, and Hunter Renfrow, I was talking with the Madden guys and I then later confirmed this story with Hunter because I interviewed him that day. Hunter Renfrow is the only player in the history of finding out his Madden score that he was angry that it was too high. He's like, I'm not that fast. What are you doing, guys? He hated his speed rating. He's like, guys, give me something to shoot for. I'm not an 89. Like, stop with this. So everyone else argues they want a higher rating. Hunter actually argued for a lower rating. He wanted a lower rating.
That's Hunter. That's Hunter in a nutshell.
Yeah. That just cracked me up. You know, he was very upset at how high his speed rating was. But, yeah, he's been money. And, you know, he's another one of those guys that I think is underrated. And I think what Coach Gruden and Coach Olsen do for your guys' offense, you know, is you guys do a really good job of putting players in positions to succeed, you know, and again, trying to find mismatches and everything like that. And using Hunter underneath, using you on mismatches, taking advantage of the speed of Nelson or Ruggs or Edwards. I want to talk, Darren, a little bit about your story. And look, you know, I think a lot's been made and rightfully so of your story in terms of overcoming personal demons and addiction. And I'm just curious if there were any, you know, for anyone out there, you know, the pandemic's been so tough. And if there's anyone out there that is struggling with addiction, or people that may not even realize they have an addiction. Is there any advice that you can give them in terms of what helped you get past your struggles?
I would say, first and foremost, if you think you can go about doing it alone, you're fooling yourself. You need people that you can talk to. You need people that you can relate to, people that are on a similar mission, similar mindset as you. You got to have community around you that wants to see you create a better life. You know, I wanted a better life for myself, but when I wasn't trying to allow others to help me or help myself, you know, the same things kept happening. And so I would challenge them to, you know, talk to somebody about it. When you vocalize it, when you, you know, speak it into existence, you realize that, you know, your problems aren't as unique as you may think they are. There are a lot of people out there that can relate to you. There are a lot of people out there. Your pain may not look the exact same, but there are people out there that can relate to you and are willing to be honest and vulnerable with you as soon as you take that first step.
I think that's so true. And, you know, no journey is alone. And I think people don't appreciate, we all have our own, you know, Daniel, bleep this. We all have our own right? I mean, we all, like, everyone has, and people go through it in different degrees, but right. We all have our own stuff that we're dealing with. And I don't think people appreciate, you know, what someone else may be going through. And so, I agree, you know, like I haven't been in the places you have been, but certainly, you know, I've been in therapy for a lot of my life. I've talked about that a decent amount, and just being able to say, like, I need help. I think you'll be surprised at what comes back at you, you know, and right. Not being scared to say that. There's no shame in saying, I want to get on this path. I just need help. Can someone lend a hand? And there will be people that can do that. I feel like, I'm going to apologize because I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet. But my sense is that if you named your podcast Comeback Stories, that this is a theme in your podcast. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, Comeback Stories. Originally, the idea of my mental coach, Donnie Starkings, we do mental coaching sessions and just have, you know, vulnerable conversations. And he was like, I feel like people could benefit from this, like getting guests to come on and share, you know, their stories. And so we kind of just ran from there, and we did each of our stories first and, you know, branched out into other people like Tyron Matthew. But we got people from all walks of life. Like, we got yoga instructors, we got, you know, friends and people that I grew up with that have crazy stories who are just normal people. We just did Alex Smith the other day. So we're kind of like all over the place with it. But we just want to show people that are successful and that are doing good things in whatever their scope of influence is, that they had to face adversity and overcome it in their own way. But just to show people that they have a comeback story in them as well.
I think that's great. I can't wait to listen to the Alex Smith one, who is, you know, I said, not only should he have been comeback player of the year, they should name the award after him. I mean, you know, yeah. they told the guy he might die. They told him they might have to amputate. They told him, you know, he would never walk again. You know, the fact that he, you know, he started and won an NFL game, you know, and got Washington to the playoffs. I mean, name the award after that guy. An amazing story. So I can't wait to listen to that one. Obviously, that's available wherever you get podcasts, I assume. Yes?
Yeah. Wherever you like to listen to podcasts, it's there.
Yeah, so iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, wherever. Be sure to check it out. Comeback Stories with Darren Waller. Darren, you're also, you know, this is obviously a big part of your life story, and it's a big part of your journey. I know your foundation is really important to you. Talk to me a little bit about starting the foundation and what you guys have planned coming up.
Yeah, starting the foundation around a year ago, I felt like, you know, it was required of me to, you know, move into my purpose and to really serve people. And I felt like that was the best way to go about doing it. And, you know, COVID has kind of put some things on hold as far as activities that we wanted to do, but now we're getting things rolling. We are starting with, you know, like an online community. Like, the main goal of it is to just put tools in front of young people and let them know that they don't have to use drugs and alcohol to cope and to be cool and fit in and things like that. So just creating an online community for them where they can have positive content, get access to other people that are, you know, on the walking in the same direction that they are. You can communicate with me on there. We're going to start like this wall talk series where it's like, I'm giving like kind of TED talk kind of talks about my story, about things that I've been through, things that I've learned from other people. And we're funding treatment for people in the state of Nevada, getting them to, you know, into facilities that they necessarily couldn't go to, because I benefited from going to a top of the line facility that I wouldn't have paid for if it was my own money. And some people don't have any resources to do it. So I want to be able to offer that to those people. But those are some of the main things we're doing right now, and just trying to, you know, serve the young people in this Clark County area.
I think that's an amazing thing. And you said it's online, right? People can, where can people find it online?
Foundation website is darrenwaller.org. You can find out about the foundation, donation links, things that we're going to be getting involved in and getting the ball rolling on. So just that website, darrenwaller.org, is where you'll find everything.
As we were saying, there's no shame in reaching out your hand and saying, hey, I need some help. And that's a great place to start, darrenwaller.org. And Darren, if I can be of help to you and your organization, please let me know. I'd be happy to do it. It's a great cause and an important one. I want to switch gears. There's no easy way to transition, but I think what's interesting in getting to know you, I mean, you're obviously a great football player, but I think whether it's through the foundation, whether it's through your podcast, you're a guy that's like, hey, there's a lot more to me than just somebody who runs and catches the football. And I want the world to know who Darren Waller is. And so in addition to the podcast, in addition to the foundation, you're working on a new album, as Daniel mentioned. So you had a debut album, Wall Street. And I thought this was fascinating. I'm not going to lie. I did not know this until before our interview when I did a little bit of research. You come from a musical family. I don't know if people realize this, but your great-grandfather is Fats Waller. Ain't Misbehaving Fats Waller. Who's, you know, obviously a jazz legend. Right. Has music always been a part of your family and your experience growing up?
I feel like it may have skipped a few generations. My dad will say that himself. But I mean, when I was like 3-4 years old, my sister and I were both taking piano lessons regularly and could like play the piano. I was in a middle school band. But then it was like that phase where it was like being in the band wasn't cool. So I was trying to be cool with the cool groups. But I was always interested in music, and I kind of came back to it once. I mean, I was always a fan of listening, but as far as creating, that wasn't until, you know, I really got into the league and I was in Baltimore. And once I started really getting into it and loving it, and it just felt natural and it felt like something I should be doing, that was around the time where I really learned about, you know, my great grandfather and realized like, okay, like this is in me, like this is something that I should be doing, I should be pursuing, and using my voice to, you know, speak on things, you know, and give people music that they would like to hear.
Which is great. And I mean, do you expect, like, listen, no one can go out on tour at the moment, but at some point when we're allowed to be in person, do you expect to try to tour with your music at all? Maybe, you know, do some club dates, anything like that?
I would love to perform, honestly. I've had visions of it ever since I started recording. Like when I record the songs, like I would just be like, I feel like these songs would go crazy at a live performance. And just to feel the energy of the people, you know, that would just be an amazing experience.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I believe there are a couple of places with stages in Las Vegas. I think you'd be able to find a couple of different venues.
Here and there.
Here and there. There's a ton there. How weird was it to play football this year with no fans? Was it a noticeable difference, or once was it one of those things where you get out on the field and you're just like, okay, now we're just playing ball?
When I'm on the field, it doesn't really make a difference, honestly. But on the bench, it's like you're just looking around, and it's just like a huge play will happen in the game, and it's like deathly quiet. Like you can hear the sidelines cheering, but it's just like, it was just weird. And like pregame was like usually like a buzz and everybody, the fans are going crazy, and it's just like we're just like quiet, and it's just like they just line the ball up and kick it off. So it was definitely weird as far as the environment, but out on the field, it was the same game.
Yeah, it was a little weird to watch. They did an okay job at, like, I don't know if you watched any football, like you watched like the Monday night game or something like that when you guys weren't playing or whatever. I thought they did a decent job in terms of sort of piping in the sounds. It didn't sound super weird. But yeah, I think we're all looking forward to, you know, normalcy, like being able to go see Darren Waller play in concert or go see Darren Waller play football for the Raiders. Last couple questions here for you, Darren, then we'll let you go. Fantasy football. So this show is about fantasy football. Have you ever played fantasy football?
I played fantasy football one time. A girl I was dating at the time, her family needed one more person in the league, and I was in it. I think this was, what, like 2017? I was out of the league. And I think I was like second to last or like last in the league.
So that's all right. That's all right. You're good at, when you're good at real football, you're allowed to be bad at fantasy football. That's pretty much the rule. How often does it come up in your life? Do people approach you or mention it to you? Your friends text you about it, that kind of thing. Does it come up that often? Does it not at all? I'm just curious how often it happens in your life.
I'm willing to say at least 75% of the people that come up to me in public and say something that has to do with fantasy.
Yeah. And I'm sure you're very good. So in fantasy, I don't know how much people have explained this to you, but in fantasy football, there are not that many tight ends. You have to play, you draft a running back, quarterbacks, wide receivers, et cetera, et cetera. And so in terms of the tight end position, it is because of sort of how the NFL is and various offenses, there aren't a lot of tight ends that put up huge offensive statistics, right? And obviously tight ends contribute in a lot of different ways to their teams, but so it's a rare position. So in addition to being one of the league superstars, Darren, you're one of the league superstars at a rare position. There's a lot of very talented wide receivers in terms of, I'm talking purely fantasy football here. There's a lot of very talented wide receivers that put up numbers and quarterbacks, but there's like a very finite amount of tight ends. It's Travis Kelce. It's the names you would expect. It's Travis Kelce. It's George Kittle. And, you are right there. And like I said, this year it was you and Travis Kelce and then long way down and then everyone else. And so I suspect all those conversations are very thankful and grateful and positive.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Everybody's like, oh, you won me my fantasy. You did this, you did that. Like, I was like, oh, all right, I appreciate it.
Well, and by the way, if Darren Waller, and I'm going to do this, if Darren Waller won you your fantasy league this year, how about making a donation to darrenwaller.org? Take a portion of your winnings of your league championship, take a portion of your winnings and donate it to darrenwaller.org. Let's reward Darren. He doesn't need our money. Signed a big deal. He's a man that got paid. But his foundation does. It's a great cause. So if Darren won you your fantasy league, darrenwaller.org.
Oh, yeah, I stamped that. Yeah. Appreciate you.
I appreciate you, my friend. Well, listen, such a pleasure to have you on the podcast. We're huge fans of you here. We've been fans of you before it was cool. Before everyone else got on the bandwagon, we saw, and thank you to Coach Olson for giving us a heads up that they had something special. And you again, so is your new album out yet?
No, I've pretty much finished recording. It's just like in the mixing process. We'll start rolling out like a couple singles and then drop it.
So if someone wants to get that, where's the best place? Is it follow you on social? You'll set up links. Like
If you follow my Instagram, it's Rackwall, RACKK, and then Wall.
Okay.
And then
RACKK Wall on the gram. Follow Darren. Yeah. He'll let you know when the new album is out. Once again, darrenwaller.org to check out the foundation. Man, we're so thrilled for all your success. I think your personal story is great. Check out Comeback Stories, the podcast that Darren does. Check that out wherever you get podcasts as well. And open invitation to come back. We'd love to have you, Darren. Continued success for you on the football field and in life, man. It's a great story, and We're thrilled for all your success.
Oh, man. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. I'll be back for sure.
All right. There you have it. The definitive Darren Waller interview, number 83 on the field, number one in your hearts. Fantastic show. Appreciate everyone following at Fantasy Focus and tweeting us those questions. Keep them coming. We're doing the show every Tuesday in the off season. So for Fields, Stefania, Secret Squirrel, and Darren Waller, I'm Matthew Berry. We'll see you next week. Peace out.
Fantasy, you're in the 06010.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.